This week, we have a warning of torrential rain and gales in the southwest. Welcome to a very wet and soggy Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes have been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities. This evening, it's a welcome return for Phil Hiscox. It'd be easier, Phil, if you explained your various roles with clubs and societies than me remember them all. Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. General Dog's Body, I think that's the best title for me.
And weather forecaster extraordinaire.
Yeah, something like that.
Phil is Mr. Football in the southwest of the country, and we think we've had it bad up here with the weather. Over the next hour, you'll find out we've had positive luxury up here, while they have had, some say 300% more rain than what they should have had, some say 600%. We'll find out a little later. What is definite, it's been wet in Cornwall and Devon. More of that to come in a couple of minutes. First of all, as ever, it's Dave with a roundup of last weekend's football, starting with step five. Locally and not quite locally.
We know the four clubs in the UCL North playoffs now. The home sides will be Lincoln United and Loughborough Students, but which one faces Melton Town or Skegness Town goes to the wire. Next to bottom, Hucknall Town were assured of their safety before their last outing of the season, but it didn't stop a remarkable crowd of 736 turning up. It's a tight one at the top in many leagues. In the North West Counties League, both the Withenshaw sides and Bury won. A single point could separate the sides going into the last day of the season. In the West Country, 3 points separate neighbours Helston and Falmouth. Both have six to play, including a showdown under the Kellaway Park lights. Congleton and Worcester City will be playing step four next season, while Bewdley Town and Desborough Town will be dropping down to step six.
One on Desborough, David, relegated for the first time in their history and missing from the top flight of the UCL for the first time since 1946.
Well, they're an institution, aren't they, that have obviously fallen on hard times.
A quick one, number two. A bit of a call out for Skegness Town because they beat Lincoln United last night in the semi-final of the League Cup. They're having a remarkably good season, and Lincoln's season is evaporating quickly.
It is, but they have guaranteed themselves a home draw in the playoffs, and no doubt they can focus on that now. But Skegness have been the dark horses, haven't they? They've just quietly come in under everybody's radar this season.
They most certainly have. And a quick one for Phil. Phil, you've got to be, I would assume, very proud that two of your old teams, Helston and Falmouth, are sitting there right at the top of step four. And one of them, if not both of them, sorry, step five, one of them, if not both of them, is going to step four.
Yes. I mean, to be honest, all the teams that we promoted from the Peninsula League have done pretty well. I mean, obviously, we've got Tavistock, Exmouth, Parkway, Mousel already in the Southern League. And like you say, Helston or Falmouth will join them automatically. And, you know, you would hope that the other one will go up via the playoffs.
And the Kellaway Park Lights is, for the ones that don't know, is Helston's ground. That is likely to be a cracker.
Oh, it will be, particularly with the Falmouth supporters. Falmouth, they have this F troop that follow them home and away, and they've struggled a bit with the sort of long distance trips and not knowing if the games are on, but they'll certainly be out in force for that one.
That's going to be a cracking night. And the way you're going, when I get down there at the end of June, I might be able to see it.
You might, that's right, yeah.
Right, a quick look into step six, David.
With matches running out, the UCL Division 1 playoff race is finally becoming clearer. Newark Town will need a single point to book their place, while Harrowby need 4 points from three matches. At the bottom, Renneth's Great Escape is almost complete following their vital home win over fellow strugglers Asfordby. One victory from their remaining three matches will be enough to see the Wrens over the line. It's a bit more complicated at the top of the Northern Counties East League, but both Shirebrook and Retford United look to have done enough to earn a playoff spot. Beverley Town's mid-victory over Parkgate propels the East Yorkshire team back to the top of the table.
And I know you've got a soft spot for Beverley Town, so you'll be pleased about that. You'll also be pleased that they sit above Shirebrook and Retford United, but we're not biased.
No, not at all. the too many clubs have probably been overtaken by the team that's got quite a lot of ambition at the moment.
Moving quickly on to the feeder leagues before we get into trouble.
Nettleham are a single victory away from lifting the Lincolnshire Senior League title for the first time, and they have four attempts to do it. Time to get the chat champagne on ice, maybe. Crowe moved into second place, but if the FA don't listen to their pleas, it will be fifth place Appleby Frodingham that will take the star prize of Pyramid Football next season. Stapleford are beginning to look over their shoulders in the not senior league. Rivals for both the title and a step six place Collingham are now only 8 points behind them with a match in hand.
Pride of Cornwall.
Only two defeats in their last 12 outings for Lizard Argyle, following a win on the road at St Ives Mariners. Tristan Hawkins doing the damage with a hat-trick, the winner coming 4 minutes from time.
See, David likes to keep up to date, Phil, with the happenings from Lizard Argyle. And another 3 seasons' time, they'll be knocking on your league. The ground grading should be interesting. It should be very interesting. I think they might have to do a little bit of work, but you never know. Right, this is Grassroots Plus with Dave Pickerel, me, Mick Bradley, and the legend, that is Phil Hiscock. Right, there's only one place to start with this one, Phil. The great British weather. Is it the worst season you've ever known in what is a very long career? And before you answer that, David's been making some notes.
Yeah, so 300% over the average rainfall has fallen in the southwest. The FA's decision to insist that the season finishes on schedule. Since the start of the season, 170 games have had weather-related postponements in the South West Peninsula League. The chair of the SPL and tonight's special guest, Phil Hiscox, was quoted earlier in the season saying, "The feeling is one of a mixture of frustration and anger. Frustration because people are used to playing, but now are not able to, and the anger because this seems to be never-ending. Liscard Athletic must play 9 men's first team games before the 28th of April. Their chairman and groundsman, Joe Colenso, said, "We're calling games off for player safety so they don't get hurt. But then the fixtures, now we're tied to, the players are going to be playing 3 or 4 times a week."
Right. Leave the next bit. We'll come back to that one at the end of this.
Okay. So, yeah, that's kind of led you into it, Phil. I guess me and Mick can sit back with a cup of tea and you can start your rant.
I'll start my rant. Yeah. First of all, just factually update you after another few postponements this midweek. We went past the 180 mark last night on postponements. So we're up to 181, I think, postponements now. Is it the worst winter? Yes. Over the years, and I've been a league secretary for 30 years and obviously long involved in football before that in other capacities. You always get a wet spell or a cold spell. You always, in the southwest, we do get these storms that come across, and over the years we've had them all. What I would say this year is different is I was postponing games in October for waterlogged pitches, and here we are 6 months later in April, still postponing games for waterlogged pitches. And that's what makes it the worst. It's not the individual particular weather. We've had, say, storms and snow and ice and all sorts of things over the years. It's just been no respite. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that the only full programme of games since October that's taken place without any rearrangements was, funny enough, Boxing Day, which was really odd. And I can tell you as a fixture secretary, they're the easiest ones to rearrange because they're all local derbies anyway to start with. Now, as for, you know, whether the FA, go on, I'll be controversial. No, I won't. I will be factual, which then other people might deem to be controversial. It's fairly common knowledge that several leagues wrote to the FA at the end of February and asked for an extension. We did so because we could see what was happening. We could see where this was going to end. And you need time to rearrange and prioritise certain fixtures to avoid midweek travelling, to space the games out. You've got lots of other considerations, clubs that are still in cup competitions, clubs that share the grounds with cricket and all the rest of it. And had the FA at the end of February listened to the leagues and granted an extension at that point, the end of season would have been a lot less stressful. It would have been a lot more structured. The priority for travelling would have been on weekends, not on midweeks. Yes, there would still be a lot of games to play, but they would have been organised in a better fashion. My criticism and annoyance, really, is that the FA chose to ignore that. We had a seven-word note from a start and ends email. Thank you for your continued hard work. And myself and a couple of people on the league committee, we often finish our conversations now with that. Thank you for your continued hard work. The reality is that the FA didn't listen to the leagues and now they're in a mess. And I mean, I saw this week that they'd given the Northern League an extra week. I don't know how they got it. I don't really, I don't object to them having it. But what I would say is it's completely and utterly useless to most clubs. Teams have already started playing twice a week, twice midweek, so three times a week. Teams have already been travelling midweek further than they would want to. Clubs that share with cricket and things like that have had to cram in their fixture lists. And it's not easy just to then go back and undo it, because some clubs have done it and therefore it's unfair on those that have had more postponements to suddenly space their games out more by extending now. But also, you've already covered the feeder leagues. I've got the St Piran League and the Devon League where a large number of my reserve teams play. The people that run those leagues are good people. There's a chap called Ian Anir who used to be involved with Truro, a chap called Chris Cole, who was involved with Witheridge, who do the respective fixtures. And they've had to play second fiddle to me squeezing in National League system fixtures by the agreed deadline and move reserve teams around and altered lots of other fixtures involving lots of other clubs. So to now rip up what I've already done and do it all over again would only cause them more work. So we haven't asked for an extension now. We asked when it was prudent. It's no longer prudent. We now just got to get on with it.
I'm told that the Step 5 Northern League have got 49 games left to play and they've been granted an extension of a week. The Step 5 Wessex League and the Step 5 Western League have not been granted any extensions and they have 48 games left to play. Hello, one match, one league gets him and the other two don't. This is the FA in fine form. It really is.
I've got 55 games left to play in each of my divisions.
There we go. Yeah. I mean, it's... I've whittled on this show week in, week out that the FA don't give a rat's, whatever the word is, about our level of football. And if they don't, and the Lisgard Athletics chairman and groundsman, he sounds a busy chap. Is it, from where I can see, is it the nail on the head? Referees are calling games off for perceived safety problems with players. And now we're asking players to play four times in 8 days and then another four times in another 8 days.
Yeah. And
now, is that me being somewhat thick around this? Because you stand more chance of an injury through fatigue and lazy tackle, whatever you call it, or your body can't stand up to it.
You're absolutely right. The other thing I would chuck in, and on top of that, is sporting integrity. I noticed there's a team, Tone, is it? Their last week of the season, they are playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. Now, I don't know who they've got on the Thursday night, but if they need 3 points to avoid relegation, what a bloody time to play them. Because they'll be absolutely shattered.
Well, let me go back to Lisgard. Lisgard need to win those football matches.
Yes.
They're not just playing at the end of the season. They're playing for, a place in Step 5 football.
Yeah. We've done our level best for them. Only this week, they lost a County Cup semi-final. I gave up a date of one of my cup finals so that they could play that semi-final after their league fixtures had finished and still in time for their cup final. So leagues and even county FAs, yeah, we are working together to reduce it. But the reality is, you know, we've now got to crack on with it. And like I say, my original point stands that had we known at the end of February when we asked and when we could see what the problem was going to be, it could have been changed across the board and more structured. Yes, they would have been busy, but you know, you would have had more travel on Saturdays, less travel on midweeks. You'd have known you got those extra weeks, so you wouldn't have plumped in for Tuesday, Thursdays, or Monday, Wednesdays quite so soon. You'd have held back, hoping to avoid it for a bit longer than you've actually been able to do.
I know it's unprecedented and maybe it won't happen again, but the way everybody's talking, maybe it will happen again and we can't stop it raining. What do we do? Well, we'll come back to Phil in a moment and see what we can do, but we're going to go away from the FA and probably get political next. It's one of them shows. Right, David, FA Vars.
It was heartbreak for Lincoln United after a penalty shootout defeat against Romford. After a goalless 90 minutes at Ashby Avenue, the Essex team came out 10-9 victors in the 12-yard lottery. A crowd of 1,475 saw it all unfold. Romford became the fourth Essex side to reach the final, but the first one for 40 years. A single goal gives Worcester City a slender advantage after the first leg own goal at the other semi-final. Played at the city's Six-Way Stadium, the game against Southend-based Great Wakering Rovers was watched by a crowd of 3,189.
And the return leg in the outskirts of Southend this weekend is already sold out with the shutters up on the ground. Don't turn up if you haven't got a ticket. So that should be a cracker. But as we said at the top of the show, you have to feel sorry for Lincoln because after so long, when you think they're going to win the UCL and they're going to go to Wembley and they was going to be the team, they could end up the bridesmaids everywhere.
Yes, it's start to play on the minds, I think.
It's a funny old game. Right, the lack of plastic pitches in rural parts of the country. And I think, David, you've got another quote from our esteemed guest.
Yes, our hands are tied, and this is a lack of all-weather pitches in the southwest. And really, there are none that can play spectator-based National League system matches. I believe there's zero in Cornwall, two in Devon. Helston Athletic and Saltash are having to play their Cornish derby in Devon because they've got an artificial surface there. Clubs are having to spend money on other venues that they can't afford. A Football Association spokesman said, "We recognise the challenges faced by grassroots leagues and clubs across the country following this season's exceptional weather conditions. Our focus and ambition across grassroots football in England is to transform grass pitch quality and deliver further 3G pitches to improve player experience and to ensure that more games are played as originally scheduled."
I cannot wait for the next bit.
I've actually asked the FA who the FA spokesman was. I haven't had a reply to that. Well, where do we start? Well, just again, start with the facts. There are because an artificial pitch has to have spectator facilities and other ground grading criteria to host National League system games. There are zero in Cornwall. There are two in Devon. One belongs to the Devon FA headquarters, which is regularly booked by various clubs. That's the one where Saltash and Helston did actually play last Saturday, but it's very, very hard to get a booking there. I had a cut tire during the season between Elburton and Teignmouth that had been postponed four times, and I tried to book that just to get this cut tire out of the way, and I couldn't even do that by offering them sort of like a 14-day period and say we'll make them play whichever night the pitch is available. There are costs obviously to hiring these things anyway, but let's get to the real gist of it. The FA apparently think we're grassroots football. That's great. I thought we were National League system, but never mind. And I'm really chuckling about the fact that they apparently are going to deliver more 3G pitches because at the moment they've delivered absolutely zilch that I can use. And you can't play more if you, well, I suppose one is more if you if you've got none to start with. I am proud of the fact this season, and I, in some ways, I hope now that I can kick this through to the end of the season. In the South West Peninsula League, we have played every single game on grass. We have played every game at a Peninsula League ground. Yes, there's been the odd reversal to the away team's ground, but we've not used a third party's ground anywhere. And all being well, and hoping that the weather has now finally changed, we will not make a single club play consecutive days. And I'd say we've done that in spite of, rather than with the help of the football authorities.
When I last looked, I think the Essex Senior League was winning the plastic pitch competition with nine different venues. We are told in our little neck of the woods, Phil, Newark and Sherwood, the council area, that we have been allocated no less than five 3G pitches. We have one at the moment, and there are five more to come in there. Why is the two in such a only two in such a vast area of Devon and Cornwall? It doesn't make any sense. And then I look at the Northern League and the leagues below the Northern League, and it's pretty much the same story up there. So the two extremities of the country, it won't surprise many to know that they don't seem bothered about.
I mean, I've been lots of these FA conferences over the years where they talk about these hubs that they've built, and you see obviously when the Football Foundation open them, the sort of press releases, and they normally get an England player, male or female, to open it. They all seem to be in the big cities, and I suppose their argument is that they are basing it on population. We haven't got the population in that way, but I still think some of the pitches that they have part funded or helped with, very often at schools, they've lacked foresight by only going for the playing surface and not the spectator facilities that go with it. There are plastic pitches that teams use for training, but they haven't got those spectator facilities, and they're all in places now where they're fenced in cages. It would be even more expensive now to put that infrastructure in place, whereas it could have been done when they built them in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody knows what I feel about football in cages. I just do not like it, but it's a damn sight better than no football, than no football at all. Is there anything in the pipeline you've got down there, or is it just a blank?
I suppose the one obvious one in the pipeline is the University of Exeter have applied to join from the Devon League to the Peninsula League, or to Step Six, and they are currently playing on the sports hub that's owned by Exeter College, which does have some spectator facilities. The Exeter City ladies or women play there on a Sunday as well, and so that one is likely to come in. But as far as sort of mass pitches available to hire, going to be very, very difficult. But also, like I say, we can come back to the cost element of this. And I want to have another side rant about one of these fixture issues. It's been the insistent on from some leagues and from the FA about getting games played no matter what and no matter where. So we've had Truro playing at as far away at Gloucester. We've had Parkway playing at Hungerford. We've had all sorts of these things. Taunton played away as well on a couple of occasions. These clubs are financially struggling, and actually making them play elsewhere denies them income, whether that's bar income, gate income, food, programmes, whatever. And I'm not entirely sure that the FA have thought through the wider implications of it. It's a short-term fix to get the games played by April the 27th. It's not a long-term solution or of benefit to those clubs that are having to give up home advantage just to get the games played. And to be perfectly honest, through no fault of their own. The FA say they recognise that there's been a lot of rain and a lot of wet winter this year. Well, they might have recognised it, but they haven't exactly helped the clubs overcome it.
No, there's been quite a lot they could have done, and they actually haven't. And I think we're going to talk about this a bit later on. But why you actually mention it? in our little neck of the woods, we've got Step 6 football clubs hiring Step 3 grounds to play league matches, to get these league matches played so they can finish the season by the designated time. But it's costing them an absolute fortune, and I don't know where the money's coming from to pay for these grounds. I'm assuming if you're going to hire a Step 4 or Step 5 ground for the night, you're going to be paying £200-£300. I don't know, but I'm assuming that's the case.
Well, let's take Taunton Town, Step 2 team, got promoted last year. They've twice had transfer embargoes imposed because of the financial mess that they're in, mainly caused by postponements. And yet the answer from the league is to make them play home games at other venues like Gloucester. I just don't see how they generate the income from doing that. And if they don't generate the income, we're solving a short-term problem this year to cause a longer-term problem next year.
Yeah, absolutely. David?
Yeah, it's quite surprising. I mean, I think a lot of people don't really appreciate the distance some of your sides are travelling down there. And somebody gave me an example. Truro playing at Gloucester is the equivalent of Gloucester playing a home game in York. You know, and people that are more used to distances and travelling in the Midlands and North said, well, that's a flipping long way to go. Well, it is. And if it's happening every other weekend, possibly we're going to be playing two or three games a week to get this league finished, it's not sustainable for anybody.
You're absolutely right. It's not sustainable. And, you know, if we, I suppose the next thing the FA would say is, well, what can we do to help? Well, as I say, I've already talked about rejigging the end date earlier. The other thing they could help with is some sort of fund to fund these extra travelling and this extra pitch hiring. It's the league's under FA orders that are compelled to make these decisions, to force these clubs to do these things. So, you know, perhaps the FA could, you know, put some money in, some sort of hardship fund for these clubs that have had to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. Lots more to come from Phil. We've only just started on this. Lots more to come. But this is Grassroots Plus, proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes, and we do thank Gusto Homes for their kind and loyal support. Getting near the end of the season. The FA said it's got to be the end of the season. Last week, we asked for your nominations for the best food served at a non-league ground. Well, David's got all those logged. We're not going to announce the winners until the very last show of the season, when we're all going to get dressed up and it's going to look, you know, we're going to do it properly. So David's got that one logged. This week, we want to know who your underachievers of the season are. So who's the team that everybody thought was going to do so well at the start of the season, and it just hasn't happened for them. For whatever reason, it hasn't happened. So your underachievers of the season award. David, you can't vote, but who would you put in that?
I don't know.
Upset somebody. Go on.
I was just thinking at the beginning of the season, when yourself and Luke were pushing me for who I thought would do well, I thought Loughborough Students would win the UCL North. They're in the playoffs, so they've kind of got there. I honestly thought Sleaford Town would be up there pushing for it. Elsewhere, I don't know, really.
Well, everybody's going to go for their localish teams, aren't they? Because that's what they're looking at. And I would actually agree with you. I think Sleaford Town are the underachievers of the season as regards the UCL. Other people might have different ideas. You could almost say that Newark and Shield United are the underachievers of the year after winning the Not Senior Cup last season and flirting with relegation until January this season. So maybe put Newark and Shield in that one. We will see what you've got to say. So David will do is a little bit at the weekend, and we would love your answers, please, to your underachievers of the season award. Right, let's take a rest from the weather and not a rest from the FA, and say to Phil, are we any closer to a second Step 5 division in the West Country?
This could be my shortest answer of the night. No, is the answer to that.
It's also your least surprising answer of the night.
Yeah, yeah. We did attend a meeting, I think it was January, February it was, at Almondsbury with the Western League and the FA, and no is the answer. No.
So is it one that the FA are now rather hoping that's gone on the back burner and
I think
will eventually fall off the back burner?
I think so. The only thing I would say that might change that is there is gossip, and you shouldn't always listen to gossip, but there is gossip that there are teams in Western League Division One in particular who would rather either not be promoted to Step 5, or if they are promoted to Step 5, that their wishes will be to play in a division that doesn't involve travelling to Helston and Falmouth. And of course, as we all know, you can't, not everybody can avoid it, because otherwise, you know, you just end up with with one division where there are 30 clubs in it, and another where there's 10 clubs in it. But whether, when push comes to shove, those clubs that are rumoured to be in that position, you know, actually refuse promotion is another matter. And I'm certainly not going to name any that have been mentioned.
I suppose if Falmouth and Helston do get promoted to Step 4, the FA's job is getting slightly easier by the season.
I think that's true. I think the only other issue for me is that the Western League's footprint itself has, partly because of clubs refusing promotion, partly because of lateral movements, their Western League Division 1, their Step 6 division, has 22 clubs in it, which is full, and is geographically very, very tight around the Bristol and Bath areas. The 22 clubs in that league probably couldn't thank themselves or thank the league and the FA enough, because they're playing an awful lot of local derbies, not travelling very far. The problem for that, of course, is that it makes it even more of a step up when somebody wins it and is told that they have to go, like say, to places like Falmouth.
Yeah, it's one heck of a culture shock for them.
Yeah.
ground grading, yet another hornet's nest. David, talk to us about ground grading.
We understand that the FA have taken the control away from the leagues for this process. Phil might be able to confirm whether this is correct or not. The deadline was March the 31st, but many clubs finding it impossible to complete any groundworks. Will this be extended to help them out? Could we have a situation where the local league clubs have passed ground grading, but the FA will be finding fault? Clubs with long-standing issues with stands, which are on order but have yet to be delivered or installed. We believe there are two Step 6 sides in the UCL who do not have any seats. One of them is likely to finish bottom of the table. I wonder what will happen to the other. I understand Tynmouth still have a lack of floodlights. And from what we've seen this season, Phil, should the ground grading put more emphasis on the pitch and a little less on the off-field requirements to obtain a pass, i.e., are there enough toilet blocks? Are, you know, is the walk to the changing rooms three steps too far?
Before Phil answers that tirade of questions, the two clubs in the UCL, when that was printed, I was led to believe it was correct, but now it turns out that one hasn't got a stand and the other one hasn't got a separate walkway for the players. It still contravenes the FA rules, and it's still past the March 31st deadline. So we wait and see. But Phil, you've got lots of questions there. Let's go back to the top one then. There's something gone up between the FA and the leagues regarding ground grading. Can you explain it for us?
Yeah, let's explain that bit first. Right. The FA have embarked on a 5-year plan and have charged the Premier League Stadium Fund with taking over ground grading, and they've aptly renamed it as Stadium Accreditation now. Yeah, we can't say ground grading, it's Stadium Accreditation.
Right, okay, can't spell that.
Right, now the plan, as far as I understand it, is that in year one, that's this year, every club at steps 3, 4, 5, and 6 would be visited and ground graded on an app by an independent assessor. Clubs who had been promoted last season, and therefore knew what work they needed to do, the March the 31st deadline still applied. Clubs who were visited, but perhaps haven't been visited for 5 years, and this independent assessor might spot something that they weren't necessarily aware that they failed on, would be given an additional 12 years, sorry, 12 years, 12 months to 2025. That wasn't a Freudian slip. now, what we are aware of, and there's lots of tittle-tattle around, that there are clubs with undersized pitches, clubs with, like you say, some fairly obvious things. If a club hasn't got a stand, it's fairly obvious. If clubs haven't got floodlights, it's fairly obvious. But there's a lot more technical failures. Is it absolutely a failure if your ground complies with absolutely everything, but the hand basin in the referee's dressing room only has cold water, not hot and cold water, for example? And also, just to complicate matters even more, the FA ground grading document at this time has not altered. And yet, when they did the inspections, they've had to do it on a factual basis. So, for example, the wording for the dugouts is that they should ideally be equidistant from the halfway line and a minimum of 3 metres apart. So if a club had a dugout or dugouts that are 2.9 metres apart, as one of my clubs has, is it a failure, those 10 centimetres, or is it the fact that the ground grading regulations say ideally not a failure? Well, the app that the inspectors have used have deemed it to be a failure, but the wording doesn't actually back that up. So the FA have promised, without telling us what bits they're going to do, they are going to clarify some of the wording in the ground grading document, presumably at the AGM season this summer. But as they haven't actually told us which bits they're clarifying and how they're clarifying them, it's a bit hard to do it. As far as leagues are concerned, they still have a league grading officer who's there to support and encourage and help clubs with, you know, grant applications, letters to planning authorities, that sort of thing. And I think that's the huge issue the FA are going to find themselves in the next year or two, particularly if every club in the country has the same deadline as the 31st of March 2025. Some clubs are going to find it very easy. You know, they perhaps have to put a bit of yellow hatch marking paint or an exit sign up, and they've complied. Some are going to have major work, which is then going to require possibly planning permission to move things. Yeah, let's imagine a pitch isn't quite big enough. You know, it's not simple of just, well, making it longer. It might be that you have to take down railings and paths and realign floodlights and all sorts of things to achieve. It might be possible, but I know the two obvious questions the clubs are going to be, who's paying and how long have we feasibly got to do this work? Because they've got to raise their share of the money. They may have to get planning permission. And if you start just moving a pitch and playing on it straight away, you might have more postponements anyway.
So ideally, then, you could have been playing on this ground for the last 5-10 years and everything is okay. The chap comes from the FA with his little app and suddenly everything's not okay. I can see next March being interesting.
Absolutely. I suppose, the FA have been very careful with their wording without suggesting that any ground grading officers at any level of the country, and we're talking north, south, east and west here, might have bent rules or things to help clubs in the past, and now they've identified things. I would add to that, though, that yearly or 3 yearly inspections were suspended during COVID. Some people haven't been inspected since pre-COVID. The criteria document has several mentions of ideallys or where possibles, or if building new, you must build to this standard. So that there's quite a bit of grey area within the document. So it's not going to be easy to make it black and white. And that's proved to be the case already. What I would also say, and this also buys into part of your argument about clubs for this season, and I think it will have to be mirrored next season. I've had an applicant club from the regional feeder leagues who were also inspected by this independent inspector. One of the things he came up with was that the pitch at this particular ground was 2 meters short, but he accepted that the runoff areas of the pitch were sufficient that they could grab a meter either end. They then had that club had a letter from the FA saying it had to be done by the 31st of March or they wouldn't be promoted. The answer back from the club, not saying I might have given them some advice, but I did, was that if they were to do it by the 31st of March, that would have involved digging out goalposts that have been in situ probably since the 1950s and then concreted in. If they then move the pitch back a metre at both ends, where they've dug those holes will be inside the 6 yard boxes of both ends. And by the way, we've still got 17 fixtures still to play.
Yeah.
They've got no idea. They've just got no idea whatsoever.
So they've now given them, those sort of clubs, apparently till May the 31st. Although, as these are playing in regional feeder leagues, where the deadline keeps going back, they might still be playing.
They're still playing on May the 31st.
Yes.
Oh, it's just pathetic. It really is. I mean, I only went to a comprehensive school, so my grasp of English is not as good as Mr. Pickering. I went to a very posh private school down in the New Forest, I've no doubt. But ideally, to me, means that's what we would like. But if you can't do it, okay.
I mean, so let's take this club with its 10 centimetres dugouts. The answer there actually would be, if you say that they fail and they have to do it, the next thing that club is going to turn around and say is, OK, well, we're going to knock down our brick-built dressing dugouts. We quite fancy these nice modern Perspex ones that cost quite a few £1,000s each. Will you give us 70% of the grant money for it? Because the other thing we're being told is that part of the reason why there's another 4 years is to space out the funding for this. Which again begs the question, why is every club at those four steps got to the 2025 if the funding is for the next 4 years?
Oh dear. You see, the two leagues that I keep a very close eye on, the United Counties up here and your league down there in the West Country, have both had ground grading people, which I think work alongside the clubs. They don't go in there laying the law down. They work alongside the clubs. Now, over the past couple of seasons, it would seem that you can buy a shipping container that's turned into a 50-seater stand and looks very nice. And it's a good job when it's done. And to be quite honest, they've been a godsend for many, many clubs. But let's take an hypothetical club down in Devon or Cornwall that needed to put a 50-seat stand in by March the 31st. The 50-seat stand is sitting in somebody's yard to do it, but the ground will not take the lorry and the crane.
I can do better than that.
Physically do it.
I can do better than that, Mick. Stoke Gabriel, who had installed a 50-seat stand technically by March the 31st, I don't know if you've ever been there, but the access road is such that the vehicle couldn't get up there. So it's actually being fabricated off-site and delivered piece by piece to be built by a local builder. And with this wet weather and things, it ain't happened.
Now, if I read this correctly, your ground grading man would say, this is the situation. Let's work together. Let's get it done as soon as what we possibly can. What worries me is that is somebody going to be sitting in the ivory tower at the FA saying March 31st, no stand, cross?
Yeah. Worse than that, though, Mick, it could be no hand basin in a dressing room, no bell or buzzer. I have one club picked up for not having a defibrillator when they pointed out that actually that wasn't a requirement until this season and nobody actually funded them. They only changed the rule last season to include a defibrillator. And there's been the scheme that they used to have with the British Heart Foundation stopped 2 years before they made it compulsory for clubs to have one.
Yeah, I just the last of David's little comment, should the ground grading put more emphasis on the pitch and a little less off the many off-field requirements? I did see a list. I'm sure it was on one of these sites on the computer where to pass your ground grade, and I think for step six was about 112 ticks you needed or something completely ridiculous. Whereas, apart from the pitch being at the right size and marked out properly, there didn't seem to be any emphasis on the pitch at all. With what's happened this season, should there be more emphasis on pitch drainage or less emphasis on the fact that you've got to have hot and cold running water in the toilets?
Absolutely. I mean, one thing I can say is that the meeting I had that I referred to earlier with the FA and the Western League, once we decided not to discuss extra step five divisions, we had a chinwag about other things. And I made that very, very point to Mark Frost, the league's chairman, and Lawrence Jones, the league's manager, that it's all very well having all these facilities, but if the games aren't on, then it doesn't matter what the facilities are.
Exactly.
And you're absolutely right. There needs to be, it's all very well an FA spokesman saying it's their commitment. Let's actually have it in fine style. There's a thing called pitch power, which is only available to clubs in grassroots football. Isn't that actually now available to clubs in the National League system? They have to fund it themselves. That's the sort of thing they could put in. Too many of the county FA ground grading, groundsman's workshops are centred on a supplier of garden machinery selling their wares, and not enough on actually helping the clubs improve the drainage of their pitches. These things take time, and they take money, and they take work to improve drainage of facilities. But the climate isn't going to change for the better, is it? I don't think any of us honestly think it is. No, so we've got to start making those investments. Otherwise, we're making people put up stands for people to watch the game in the dry, knowing that actually, if it's wet, the one game won't be on anyway. I often say, actually, a little joke here, that there's a difference between football and cricket. In cricket, their stands, generally speaking, don't have roofs, and that's because they don't play in the rain. Football grounds stands have roofs because you generally do play in the rain, but that actually is becoming less and less true now.
It is, because if you wake up on a Saturday morning and it's raining, you're almost certain that game is not going to get played, and we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes' time. And before anybody starts throwing that, we're based in the East Midlands, why we're talking about Devon and Cornwall all the time. Well, we're not talking about Devon and Cornwall, because what Phil is mentioning is countrywide. This is happening in every league throughout the country. Everybody is in the same boat. We're using Devon and Cornwall as a template, if you like, but this is happening all over the country, and all over the country, football clubs that we love so much are being kicked in the teeth by the FA every single corner they turn. David, have you got any comments on ground grading before we move on?
No, I mean, a few years ago, we spoke to Sheridan and said the rule seems to be in Germany at their sort of outside the top two Bundesliga. If there's 11 aside, they want to play football, you've got two assistants, a linesman, and there's a pitch and there's nets up, you can play. Whereas over here, are there purple blocks in the toilet, the air fresheners, and are they lavender scented? In? No, they are. Well, you can't, because we actually want you to use orange coloured ones that smell a lemon and things like that. And, at the time we thought he's taking the pee somewhat, but when some of the stuff you hear, he's not far off the mark, actually, is he? It's a shame. And as you say, there's lots of clubs have spent a lot of money on facilities and getting it all up to date. And then suddenly some of them haven't been able to play at their facilities in some cases since before Christmas. And now they're being expected to go 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles, in some cases 160 miles to play a home game. They're not going to break even this season, are they?
Well, just a quick one. Will this tip any over the edge, do you think? Are we just waiting for it to happen?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, locally to us, I don't think, if I'm right, I think Ashby Ivanhoe haven't played at home in the league since about October. I think they've had one cup game since. They've been having to hire Quorn, which isn't still 15, 16 miles away, but that can't have come cheap. They must have played somewhere in the region, I believe, 10 games now there. All right, say Quorn have rented out to them for £200, say. I don't know what it is. That's £2,000 they've had to find from somewhere. And I bet their gates are down, because not everybody's can travel.
With no income from the bar or anything.
Yeah, and I know the diehards will still go, but in a lot of cases, the folks that would have probably put the coat on, I don't know, at 6:30 and wandered down for a 7:45 kickoff, they're not go- if they haven't got transport, there's nowhere they're travelling 16, 17 miles to go and watch a game.
We've seen this, Phil, with one of the teams in the division where we watch all the time, the United Counties. Melton Town had a state-of-the-art 3G pitch, which actually turned out 18 months later to be anything but state-of-the-art and had to be ripped up. So they've had to play the whole of this season, 15 miles down the road at Loughborough, 15, David?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, 15 miles down the road at Loughborough. Regularly, they was getting gates of 200+. This season, it's anywhere between 90 and 50. It's a massive... When you've got to play away from your home, those gates drop very quickly and they take an awful lot of getting back.
Indeed. And also the sheer number of games that people have been cramming in to the end of the season. You know, people have only got a finite time scale and budget to go and watch all these games. It's not cheap to be out every night watching a game, whereas if they had perhaps sort of spaced the season out a bit better... Then you know that would have helped the clubs as well financially,
and that's why Phil's doing the podcast tonight, seeing and missing a game in the sunshine. Even though he has got his gold card to get into these matches, he's missing the game for us, which is we thank him very much for that. Unashamedly now, Cornwall and probably Devon, if he wants to talk about Devon.
I'm a Devonian.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Right, so despite everything that's been thrown at you this winter, I think football in Devon and Cornwall, on the whole, is a success story. David?
Yeah, I'd just like to say before I go on to this next bit, we appreciate your continued hard work, Phil. So, your neck of the woods, crowds are up. Clubs are enjoying success. I mean, as an example, Helston and or Falmouth look like they'll be playing at a higher level next season. Ivybridge are winning the Southwest Peninsula League East Division, and you've got a two-horse race in the West Division. Apart from the weather, I'd have said everything's pretty rosy at the moment.
Yeah. Can I slightly change two-horse race to a red-hot two-horse race? Because it's just text come through while we're talking that Newquay are 1-0 up at Liscard at half-time. So that would make it even more. I don't like blowing my own trumpet, and it's not down to me. It's down to the hard work of the clubs. And to be fair, you know, I'll give some credit to the FA that they've allowed these changes to the structure. Yes, you know, people have made the argument for them, and the FA have gone along with it. But I remain proud of the fact that people like Plymouth Parkway, Willand Rovers, Exmouth, Tavistock, Mousel. I've had, not just in Peninsula League at Step 6, but I've had all of those at Step 7 at one time or another. So the fact that they're now going up through the system proves that there was that bottleneck and the clubs down here had the ability to play higher in the pyramid. It was just finding a way of allowing that to happen. And you know, with the exception of Millbrook this season, pretty well every club that's gone up has more than held their own, and in some cases, you know, vastly held their own and gone on to the next step again very quickly.
Most certainly. Let's talk about the West Division, because once again, it's a red hot two-horse race, as you've said. Who are you putting your money on?
Liscard, even though I've just said that losing 1-0 at half time. Liscard can afford one defeat. Maybe that's the one tonight, but yeah. St Austell, don't know. Yeah, I'll tip for Liscard.
Does it annoy you that, unlike the rest of the country, you've got one team going up full stop from each division?
No, it was part of the package to do it. And we haven't got the huge volume of clubs to infill behind. I mean, that's the other thing. The downside of promoting all those clubs is I've actually had nobody back. So it is a struggle to then populate the divisions. But yeah, that's in some ways that's a blessing, because if those clubs were being relegated, you'd then question whether it was right to have promoted them. So yeah, I expect to probably get Millbrook back this year. They have struggled, but that's more to do with the fact that the manager left and the players left. It wasn't, you know, that they didn't weren't playing at the wrong level when they were promoted.
It was inevitable when a manager goes that everybody else goes. A quick mention the St. Piran League, because I looking from the distance that I look from, I think combining all football in Cornwall into one league seems to me a good template for how it should be done in counties.
Yes, I believe that's all men's adult football, isn't it? There's still several youth leagues, and the women's league is separate from it. But all the men's 11-a-side, it seems to have worked. I know several of the people that run that league. They're good people. They've got sort of east and west split to reduce travelling. Because again, even though it's one county, as perhaps people further afield won't necessarily realise that once you get to Exeter, the motorway stops.
I know.
So,
And when you go past that Cornwall, that sign that says "Welcome to Cornwall," and then look at your sat nav and say, "Oh, we've only got another 90 miles to go till we're at each lizard." Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, a special mention for them, Division Three West of the St. Piran, and they're fourth in the table. What a cracking season for the lifeboatmen there.
There is a rumor, and I'm not going to confirm or deny it at this stage, that next season the Groundhoppers are down in Cornwall for Easter, and we are looking at potentially two guest clubs, as in clubs that aren't in the Peninsula League but are first teams at a ground that hasn't been hopped before. I'd have to say in the poll, number one slot is Nampean. The Groundhoppers particularly want to visit there. But Lizard Argyle was mentioned, particularly as its proximity to Mullion, which is one of the grounds that we will be going covering for, as the Peninsula League.
Just up the road, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
5 miles
I don't
in
know quite what Lizard Argyle would make of an Easter groundhop, but it is a possible.
I
think
think
you'll
Ants pasties will be full of it. Yes.
I
Go on,
think you'll be
David.
asked to provide a lifeboat cover though. I think you'll have to make, because as I
Yeah.
understand it, if the lifeboat goes, half the
The
crew leave the pitch to go and man the lifeboat.
lifeboat goes, aren't they? We have to get the Mousel boys to come over and man theirs
Yeah.
instead.
Yeah, the game could be off, but yeah, weather apart, it's all going well.
And when we talk about ground grading, we get all hitched up on little things about ground grading, and this is part of this sort of technical idea of, like you said, 112 tick boxes and things. The reality is the facilities in the Southwest. And again, I'll give some credit to the FA there and the Football Foundation. There's a lot of money being spent, but it is, in my opinion, more important that that they've got dressing rooms, pitch, floodlights. It's not as absolutely important whether they've got the required number of shower heads or square meters of space and all the rest of it. And somebody, an old club person, when they were moaning about pitch sizes, pointed out that land in Devon and Cornwall is sold by the acre, and the acre is 100 yards by 100 yards, not 100 meters.
Brilliant. And in the accent as well. Absolutely spot on. Dave, this week's rumour mill.
With Bourne Town on their way to Step 5 and relegated Pinchbeck almost certainly finding themselves in the Eastern Counties League alongside Holbeach, the UCL Division 1 is down to two Lincolnshire clubs, or most likely none if Harrowby get promoted and Blackstones move into the Spartan South Midlands League. That would leave the division entirely made up of Nottinghamshire and Leicestershire clubs. I think some of us used to go and watch games in a similar league called the East Midlands Counties League that covered those areas.
Yeah, which was redundant because they wanted a bigger area. Yeah, no comment. I'm saying nothing. Right, we changed this last week and we enjoyed a wonderful rendition of the most memorable footballing day out. So we thought we'd do it again and ask Phil what his most memorable footballing day out was.
I struggled with this. I mean, last year we had like grassroots heroes and things, which was fairly easy. I really struggled with this, but I've come up with one which is more than football. One of my hobbies and likes to do is a bit of ground hopping and going up and down the country to different grounds. One of the negative sides of being involved in a league is that you can't do that every week. You know, you've got a sort of commitments down here. But probably my most memorable footballing day out, a couple of years ago, I had a short trip, stayed in Sheffield and took in a few things. But on the Friday, so this would have been late July, pre-season time, I caught the train to York and I spent a cracking morning walking around the National Railway Museum. Because, you know, you've got to do that. If you're not been to the National Railway Museum in York, go. It's wonderful. And then after some fish and chips in the Shambles, or whatever it is the Shambles, isn't it? It's called at York.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. A trip around York Minster. I have to say, I did bottle out of the climbing up the stairs to walk along the roof because I'm not one for heights, but down in the crypt. And then in the evening, watching York City versus Hartlepool United in a friendly. What a day out.
I think so. That sounds absolute cracking day out.
Would that have been Bootham Crescent or Kit Kat Crescent?
Yes, Kit Kat Crescent as it was at the time. Yeah,
which was, for its old-fashioned style, although it had some updates on it, it got a lot of character, hadn't it?
Yeah. I enjoyed that as a day out. Yeah, it was... I have done similar ones. One sort of second place, Didcot Railway Centre. It only opens on weekends in the summer, and only one weekend a month is it actually in steam because they haven't got an awful lot of lines there. There's a lot of sheds and things to look at trains, but not a lot of line for them to go whizzing around. And I managed to do Didcot Railway Centre in the morning in steam, and then Didcot Town versus Oxford United in a pre-season friendly afterwards.
Another great idea. It's amazing how many people do this, actually. They look at the away team and then they'll go and visit something of historical in the town, either it be the railway or whatever. And I think, if I've got this right, I think every year when they're in the same division, FC United of Manchester, they deliberately go on the preserved railway when they go to Ramsbottom.
Yeah.
Again, they do that. They make a big thing of sort of travelling on that and... What a great idea. I mean, it's expensive to travel around the country if you make a day of it, and it must make money for the local businesses as well if they suddenly find, you know, 200-300 hoppers or away supporters turn up and they're buying chips at the chip shop and they're buying, you know, cobs or whatever from the local sandwich shop. It all helps.
Absolutely.
I go to the lifeboat station than a football match.
We do. I couldn't get you out of it for over an hour either.
Yeah. And then even you had to admit the lifeboat station was a lot more entertaining than the football.
Yes, it was actually, wasn't it? It was. It certainly was that day.
Right, it's news time. So what's David found us?
Well, we're staying totally locally at the moment. 10 days after the unofficial announcement, we still wait confirmation on Newark and Sherwood United's new home. Apparently, there are no less than 5 plastic pitches earmarked for the area. That's something that will probably interest Phil, and we had mentioned that already. Nettleham are on a course for a league and cup double. They will play Appleby Frodingham in the Lincolnshire Football League subsidiary cup final. In the Challenge Cup final, Crow Colts will face Wibberton. Anstey Nomads are looking a way to move from their flood-prone Cropston Road ground, and they're in talks with Martins High School and the Football Foundation regarding a 3G stadium pitch.
Around the country, and this is what we've mentioned already.
Among the clubs having to hire a ground to enable them to compete the fixtures in time are Bagshot Lee, who have gone to Slough Town, Horndean playing at Chichester, Potters Bar playing at Haringey, while back in the West Country, Lifton and Bodmin Town, seconds of the St Piran's League Division 2 East, are playing a double header of 30 minutes each way with Lifton versus Bodford. Bodmin kicking off at 11:30. Let's start again. Bodmin kicking off at 13:30 and Bodmin versus Lifton at the same ground at 1500 hours. So, yeah, they're cramming them in, aren't they?
I can remember that's what we used to do in the olden days. And obviously, you can't do it in pyramid football, but it's not a bad idea, Phil, to get the games in.
Actually, I have done it in pyramid football once.
All right.
Going back to another crisis that we've had over the years, I've been in this job too long, foot and mouth. Many years ago, we had Ivybridge, because they were part of the national park, weren't allowed to play home games, and they had Appledore to play home and away. So we played on a Sunday afternoon. It was something like 2 o'clock, Appledore versus Ivybridge, 35 minutes each way, because that was the minimum at that time. And then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we played Ivybridge versus Appledore at Appledore. And it was quite inventive. We had three match officials. Two of them were referees. So one refereed one and one refereed the other, and then ran the line in the opposite fixture. One young lad ran the line in both games. And we also enabled the gap in between for the teams to reissue their team sheets so they could change players from after game one before game two. And oddly enough, Appledore won the first game, which was technically their home game. Ivybridge had a carload of players arrive after the first game, but before the second game, who had played in a Sunday Cup final in the morning and then travelled up to play in the second game. And Ivybridge won the second game. So they technically won their home game as well.
This, to me, these are the stories that make football. I really do hope that, you know, leagues and clubs are still going to be able to use the common sense, because you've got to have a bit of fun in there as well, and it's not all going to be taken away from us. And, you know, I applaud them too. They're getting the games in.
That's right. And I say, and foot and mouth was that the season's crisis, and it affected some clubs differently than others. But again, particularly in a rural area.
Yeah, and that it's what it's all about. Right, where we got to, David? Below the pyramid.
No less than 11 teams have withdrawn from the Hertfordshire Senior League since the season commenced. Manchester Gregorians have gone from the Premier Division of the Manchester League. Will they be the last side to disband before the season finishes? I suspect not. Last week, we told you of the first 10 clubs that have passed all the criteria to join the pyramid. Added to that list are Herefordshire League champions Wellington, who will start their new life with a new name, Tetbury, Gornal Athletic from the West Midlands, and Wearside League, Darlington Town. So plenty to go out there, isn't there?
There is, and that should be where we say thank you very much, Phil, again for speaking and saying it how it is, but not quite, because I've got one more to drop on our esteemed guest. All these games have been called off, and all these games have been called off mainly by the match referees. Now, yes, they have got a job to do, and Phil will explain the criteria in doing that. And I don't want to get him into trouble, so I'm not asking him to pass opinions. It's up to him what he says. The wonderful South Western League Grand Up, which is, I would go so far as say, the premier Grand Up in the country, should have started with Honington versus Sidmouth, but despite all the work from Honington and both sets of players saying it was fit to play, supporters arriving in Devon from all over the country, the referee called that match off eventually, probably 30 minutes-ish before kickoff. I'm old enough, as is Dave, and okay, Phil's only a young lad, but we're all old enough to have played football on grounds that's got 2 or 3 inches of snow in it, got a puddle in it, is a mud bath. We used to play professional football on mud baths, for Christ's sake. Phil, are referees helping themselves?
It's di I'm not going to criticize that particular referee or things. It is difficult. What I would say is far too many times this season, and I'm locally in my area of the woods, not just in the Peninsula League, but there's been Southern League games, National League games. There's been far too many instances this season of away clubs, players, and supporters traveling a considerable distance to then find the game called off. Now, whether that's because the clubs aren't inspecting properly before they make them travel, perhaps that's a desperation to say the game is on. Perhaps it's that the re inspecting referee in the morning has a different opinion than the referee who's actually refereeing the game in the afternoon. Occasionally, it can be a change in the weather circumstances, and I understand that. But the regulations or the guidance that the FA issue about postponements does say that you should go with the morning inspection, the pre-referee's inspection, if he's deemed the pitch playable, unless there's been a deterioration in the conditions. And sometimes that hasn't been the case. That I do think whether that's a training exercise for clubs and referees about how they conduct inspections in the mornings, whether there's a training there about a referee turning up to find a pitch that he isn't 100% ideally with, and whether it is always the right decision to postpone, or whether that, like you say, that there are circumstances where you can get a game played. It will do the non-league game a disservice if we don't work through how we can avoid these last-minute postponements.
Like we've said, ground grading or stadium accreditation, whatever it's called these days, and you've got this wonderful checklist of 100 and something items. Is it just down to how the referee feels the pitch might play, or does he have certain criteria to follow? Because I don't think anybody knows this.
Again, it varies from referee to referee, doesn't it? I've got some referees that are ex-players that would perhaps look at a pitch and say, "Well, I've played on games like that. Let's get on with it." You have these more career-minded referees these days that they see the money at the top end of the thing, the pyramid, the Premiership, and the full-time jobs, and dare I say, a certain degree of fame. Most of the referees that are doing the Premier League are household names, aren't they? In relative terms, those career referees perhaps haven't had the knowledge of playing on these pitches. They don't understand that actually, a bit of a wet patch, it's happened before, you get on with it. A player can get injured just as easily on a rock hard pitch at the start of the season as he can on a wet pitch at the end of the season.
Exactly. This is what I can never figure out. We let players play on pitches in July and August that are absolutely like concrete, but that is not a problem. But when one's a little bit soft, it's dangerous. I know what I'd rather play on.
Well, indeed. Over that hot weekend, I'd have to say at least two of the six games that were played, the pitches were far wetter than the one that wasn't. But yeah, I've got to put myself in the minds of the referee. You have to respect his decision. And to be fair, he got quite a lot of pressure to play, and he stood his ground. So give him credit to that. But very frustrating. I would say, though, in some ways, from a ground hopping perspective, it was a useful reminder that as much as we organise these ground hops and things, nothing is ever absolutely certain, is it? It's
Absolutely not. And we had a case of the in the North, Dave, correct me if I get this wrong, in the North West League's ground up, Squiresgate on the outskirts of Blackpool got called off pretty much in that half hour before they played. And they were saying, and I've no reason to disbelieve them, they was probably upwards of £5,000 out of pocket. You work it slightly different down there, don't you? Because I think Hodington in particular was looked after.
Yes, I mean, I don't know quite why there were 5,000 out of pocket. I can't imagine that. What I would say is the South West Peninsula League HOP is the only one that's organised privately by a league. So when a Hopper pays his money, he pays it not to an organisation, he pays it to the league. The league pays the bill for the coach hire, that sort of thing. And any profit from the hop goes into the league's funds. That's not to suggest anybody else is making a profit from organising these things, but it's purely done by the league for the league. And one of the things we were able to do is the advance ticket money that we had, we did a bit of a straw poll on the coaches to make sure that nobody was going to demand a refund from Honiton. And the verdict was very clear. So, you know, Honiton should still get the gate money that we collected.
Excellent. David, you're a bit of closet groundhopper. Southwestern, the only private one in the country, and I would go to far to say probably the best one.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was, Phil, but I know it certainly wins plaudits. I was smiling to myself when the game at Honiton was called off, not because it was called off, other than a few weeks before, we'd asked people listening to this podcast to comment on their favourite ground hop. And I can't even remember the clubs involved, but one group of supporters said, oh yeah, I remember that game. It was the example they used, it was like the mud wrestling pool in the local strip club. And the game only went ahead because the ground hop was on.
It was either Clompton versus Willand or Godolphin versus Newquay. Those are the two.
I think it was Godolphin actually, because yeah. I think it was Newquay fans, and then I think they poked their rivalry with Falmouth and said, and I think we took more supporters there than you did that season as well.
I mean, there was one in Cornwall a few years ago which was so wet that the standing joke was that I'd promised each of the seven referees a cup final at the end of the season. Fortunately, I hadn't told them which cup final or which season they were going to get.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Phil, you're a star. You're a star for coming on here. You're a star for not sitting on a fence. And we really, really do appreciate that, because the people that listen to the show hear it how it is. And that is fantastic. David.
Yes, it's been an absolute pleasure again, Phil. In fact, there was a lot of plaudits after your last visit when you were explaining the sort of disagreement between with your league and one of the other Western leagues. And somebody said, and to be fair, the gentleman from the Southwest Peninsula League gave both sides of the argument as well. So we do know that people use it. You obviously do look after your own league, but you are prepared to see it from the other side. And the insight that you've given us once again is brilliant. And yeah, I'm grateful for you not going to watch the rearranged ground up tonight.
I would just say I'm a football man through and through. I go out and watch football every night of the week. At the start of the season, I was at the UCL Hop, and I hope to be back in your neck of the woods again late July to do that again. We're here to enjoy football, and that doesn't matter whether you're in Nottingham or Norfolk or wherever. It's the game that I'm always a great believer that. On the pitch, two teams should fight tough and nail for the points as hard and within the laws of the game that they can. Off the pitch, particularly the non-league game, we're here for the good of the sport.
Go and have a pint afterwards and have a cuddle and put the world to right. I've always said that if you kick seven bells out of each other for 90 minutes, as long as you're going to the pub afterwards for a pint, that's all that matters.
Absolutely.
It really is. And that is what our level of football should be all about. Forget the grudges, support the team that you want to support and enjoy it. And that's what we should do. Phil, we can't thank you enough. We'll see you again early doors next season, like we always do, or probably it'll still be the end of this season.
They might just merge into one another.
They might just go through to the same one. So we will see. And until then, David, who have we got next week? Do we know?
It's no guests is arranged at the
it's
moment.
Me and you,
it's
isn't it?
It's me and yes,
it's
I think
me and you.
Yes, no doubt we'll find something for you to rant about.
Me?
Yes. Oh, I forgot you're the voice of reason these days.
I am the voice of reason. Anybody who thought I disliked the FA now knows why I dislike the FA, because you made it said correctly instead of just me rambling. And on that note,
good night.
Good night, all. Catch you next week.